chatting.
This call is now being recorded.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, before we start talking here, I wanted to encourage you and make sure that if you, because as you said in your emails, you want to record this, I want to make sure you have your recorder on and you're ready to go.
All good.
Okay. So I'm going to start off. I'm going to read a few things, Adam, and then we'll chat for a little bit. But I kind of just kind of get through this this formal portion before we start the interview. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. No problem. And you're there with Captain Vargas or Commander Vargas, right?
Correct, sir. And we're sitting in his office at our headquarters in San Diego, California.
Oh. Okay. Great.
Yeah. So. Hey, Adam, so is it okay if we call you Adam, or do you want Mr. Brecky, or?
Yeah, I asked you to call me Adam. That's great.
Okay, sir. Okay, Adam, hey, for the purposes of the transcription, because we are recording this as well as you are, this is a recorded interview of Adam Brecky in regards to complaint file number 601-25001 with the California Highway Patrol. The date is January 13th, 2025 is the year. And it's 1:01 p.m. or 13:01 hours. Adam, I am Sergeant Gabe Newton, and seated in the office with me is Commander Mike Vargas. We are both assigned to the CHP Border Division Investigative Services Unit. And for the identification of voices on the recording, because we will probably have this transcribed, we will state our name, we will spell our last name, our rank, and our ID number. And Mr. Brecky, after we're done, I would like you to state your full name and spell your last. Is that okay?
Yep, totally.
Okay. We're going to do that right now. So, again, my name is Sergeant Gabe Newton. Last name is spelled N-E-W-T-O-N, and my ID number is 15652. Captain?
And Captain Mike Vargas, V-A-R-G-A-S, ID number 17798.
This is Adam Brecky. My last name is spelled B like boy, E-R-E-K-I.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, and during the interview, please remember the transcriptions, and obviously we're doing this telephonically, can only decipher audio when one person is speaking. Please try not to speak at the same time or interrupt someone when they're speaking. Please use common language during the interview so a layperson would understand your meeting. For example, do not use police jargon or radio police calls or radio codes. And lastly, use audio words rather than shaking your head or nodding your head, obviously because we're on the telephone. Okay, Adam, this interview is for a civilian complaint which was filed by Adam Brecky on January 18th, 2025. Mr. Brecky, we have a few questions to ask you in regarding to the complaint that you have filed. It is my goal to get the specific facts from you directly of why you filed this complaint. With this said, we are here to discuss the complaint where you stated in your statement of the CHP 240, accusing Officer Mejia and Lieutenant Montegudo of dishonesty and for failure to perform a competent investigation. This is a fact-finding inquiry to gather your statement, and this will allow us to look further into your concerns in regard to this complaint. Do you understand everything I just read?
I do.
Okay, sir. And if you're ready, we would like to get started with a few questions.
Please, go ahead.
Okay, sir. All right, Adam. As stated in your signed CHP 240, what specific statements or actions by Officer Mejia do you believe, and according to your 240, I'm quoting you from your statement, covert dishonesty?
Okay. In order to explain how or to meet the burden of proof, if you will, of that, I would like to go over the entire incident report with you to state all of the statements of facts that are not true, because either A, they are not in the court case that Investigator Mejia investigated, or B, they're just period not true. And the same goes with the conclusions of law. So that could start what is untruthful. And then, as I stated in the 240B, there are other things that are in support of the dishonesty in the fact that mainly he claimed that he did an investigation when, as we get into the incident report, I will show you that no full, fair, impartial, or independent investigation was actually done, and specifically that he claims that my claim was unsubstantiated. yet it is frankly impossible to conclude that unless you do a full, fair, impartial, and independent investigation, which as we go through this, I can show you was not done.
Okay, but for the question, and I know it seems very simple, but if you have very specific facts of what Officer Mejia did to you where you believe he was covertly dishonest in his investigation?
Yes, I have to go over the report with you to point out the specific things. I haven't made a, because I didn't know what you're going to ask me, I don't have a list of answers prepared. So what my thought was,
Fair enough, sir.
I read through, I can get through the complaint fairly easily, but that's where I can begin showing you things that are dishonesty. And part of when I use that word covert dishonesty, it's what I'm meaning by that is that he's claiming overtly that he did essentially a full, fair, and impartial investigation of the claims that I, or the allegations that I made to him. And why I'm saying that it's covert is because based upon what I can show you, that is not what was done. And so it's a misrepresentation. It's deceitful.
Mr. Vrecki, question for you. Is any part of what you're going to say in regards to that, in addition to what you've provided in your attachment and or in the emails that you sent Sergeant Newton, just so we have an idea of kind of?
Yes. What was in the 240B and what the emails I've sent you provide, like the big picture. These other things are, some of them are not, I'm not going to make a big deal out of them. I'm just going to point them out to you, but I'm going to show that they're a pattern of, while it looks like he's doing an investigation, it's not really what's happening and that there's a lot of, factual inaccuracies and law inaccuracies. And frankly, I've been an investigator for over 20 years now. This is basically what I got from Mejia is a regurgitation of statements by witnesses or potential suspects and a potential victim. It's not an analysis. It doesn't include any conclusions of law on how he arrived at his determination. And basically, if you look at the law that has been made by the U.S. Supreme Court, federal courts, and the California Supreme Court, Officer Mejia seems to arrive at some conclusion that's the opposite of those things. And he even arrives at a conclusion that's the opposite of what the interview judge told him. So I'm not sure where he's getting all of this, but I don't see how that could be possibly honest, fair, and impartial if, you know, he's not substantiating his reasons why. So...
Understood. Do you want to take a few minutes? So I do have a copy of Officer Mejia's report in front of me. It's a 9-page report.
Yeah.
Do you want to go through this with me so I can very specifically highlight and
yes.
understand better what you're trying to tell us or interpret to us?
Absolutely. I'll just read it very quickly. If I have a comment on it, I'll make a comment. And if you don't understand something that I've said, could one of you just say stop and then, you know, I'll stop. Is that fair?
Understood.
Okay. He says in March of 2022, I was assigned to investigate Adam Berkey's complaint against Orange County Superior Court Judge Chafee. I don't know what his assignment was, but my complaint was actually about the three justices that wrote the opinion, the appeal opinion in this case. And that is what I understood. I contacted the CHP for because, as I understand, your jurisdictional bounds, it is primarily to the Court of Appeal, the Fourth District Court of Appeal in Santa Ana, and not to the Superior Court. I had already gone to the Orange County Sheriff Coroner's Department to deal with the issues and investigation involving Judge Chafee. So that I don't know what he was assigned, but that's not the complaint that I made to him. He said Judge Chafee oversaw a civil case between me and the Humphreys, and I alleged grand theft against Judge Chafee. Again, the allegations were not just against Chafee, but against the appellate justices. And I actually alleged robbery, not grand theft. So then he goes down to investigation. And the first thing I want to point out about here is that, as I understand an investigation, when you do an investigation, you take witness statements or the statement of a victim and the statement of a suspect. And he's not doing that here. He is arriving at disputed facts and stating that they are his investigation. So what I mean by that is during this case, there was a dispute of whether I entered into a contract with the Humphreys or my company did. And so he starts off with the investigation saying in April of 2012, Adam Berkey entered into a contract with the Humphreys. Well, how did he arrive at that conclusion? That's what the judge determined and what the Court of Appeal determined. But that's, if he's going to start with square one with the investigation, then that needs to be an open question and he needs to state how he arrived at that conclusion in his conclusion, not at the onset of the investigation. So he's basically forming a bunch of facts that are disputed. So again, I'm just pointing this out to show that there's inaccuracies, but I'm not making a big deal of them. You know, I'm just pointing it out at this point.
No, I understand, sir.
I'm reading down.
Just do me a favor, Adam. If you switch pages on me, just let me know what page you're on, okay?
Okay, great. Yes, I absolutely will. Okay, so he says Adam Berkey filed the suit against the Humphreys on August 21st, 2015. I didn't file the suit against the Humphreys. My company did, Spartan Construction. And he said he filed the suit after the contract was terminated. He doesn't say who terminated the contract, but I have a document showing that the Humphreys terminated Spartan and not me.
Okay.
And it was not that I was not paid the remaining balance. My company was. So I'm turning the page to the next one.
Adam, again, can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, so just, you know, reading through everything you sent me and reading the notes from the court doc and stuff like that, did the court determine that the contract was between you, Adam Berkey, and not Spartan? Am I correct on that?
Yes, yes. But there's an issue to who actually performed the work on the project, because the statute that they allege that I violated, 7031B, it requires performance of work and acceptance of compensation. So my company, who I was the license qualifier for, the person who had the skills and experience requirements, I got that license. I had to qualify for that license from my company. So even if they said that they contracted with me, my company performed the work, and it's not illegal for a licensed contractor to perform work. So that's part of one of the things going on here. I didn't really make this. So when I talked to, I'm going to call him Ernesto, who's Officer Mejia. My big thing was I was fined by a judge almost $1 million, and that judge didn't have lawful authority to do that. That was the main thrust of my complaint. And so I would be happy if Officer Mejia Ernesto had just addressed that. All this other stuff that's going on here, it isn't even really relevant. The only question is, did the judge have lawful authority? If he did, there's no crime. If he didn't, then what I'm alleging is that if he didn't have lawful authority to do it, then that's the taking of property without law. It's theft. It's robbery, actually, if I'm saying, because it's done by force of the judicial power of California. So I turn to page two.
Okay. Can I ask you another question, Adam, while you're talking? Sorry to keep on interjecting myself here, because I'm just trying to get a clear picture of what's happening here.
Okay.
Did you took this to court, and that's what you tried to appeal upon, or you did appeal upon, is that the judge did not have, or he was out of his jurisdiction to oversee the case. Is that correct, in a nutshell?
Yes.
In the court, did the court not, you went to the Ninth Circuit, right?
Well, first let me just say that I appreciate you asking these clarifying questions, because they're all very important. Okay. So what happened was, I had a trial in the Superior Court in Santa Ana, and that's my allegation, that the judge didn't have authority to do what he did. So then I made an appeal to the Fourth District Court of Appeal in Santa Ana, and they agreed with the opinion. But again, because the opinion initially, the judge didn't have authority to do what he did in the first case, all of the appellate justices didn't have authority to do what they had the second time around.
Okay.
So then I went to the California Supreme Court. Now, ordinarily, what you submit to the California Supreme Court is something called a petition for review. It's another appeal. They don't ordinarily, in a case like this, have to take your case if you've already had a full, fair, and impartial trial and appeal. That obviously didn't happen in my case, because none of the judges, none of the trial or appeal judges, had authority to do what they did. So they were mandated to take my case. So although Officer Mejia never mentions it, they were part of the complaint that I made. It was really against all of the justices of the California Supreme Court as well, for refusing to exercise authority that they do have. See, basically under law, all public officials have either two types of duty. One, you have a duty to do something, or B, a duty not to do something, and or a duty to intervene to stop something that's being unlawfully done. And so it's kind of two sides of the same coin of authority. And so they either have to do one or the other. And so thus far, I'm alleging that the trial and appeal court justices exercised authority that they didn't have, and the superior court justice or the Supreme Court justices refused to exercise authority that they were required to intervene to stop what was going on. So then I went to the I appealed to federal court, which is the U.S. Supreme Court, and they refused to hear my case. That again was another breach of constitutional rights and duties, because there was no court in California for me to bring my case to actually be heard and have my rights recognized. So everything that has happened in California so far was against the law. So then I go to the Supreme Court, and they deny me judicial relief, which is against the law. And they actually, in many of their cases, say that if we refuse to exercise authority when we have a duty to do so, it's called treason to the Constitution. So when I couldn't get any relief from any of these courts, I then filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California. That judge refused to hear my case and threw it out, basically saying that she had no authority to do anything about it, which is another lie. I'm not going to get into that right now. Okay. So then I appealed that case to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And while my case was on appeal, I had written some letters to Justice Clarence Thomas, telling him what was going on, Justice Thomas of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Supreme Court, correct.
And there was something that was going on within the California courts and federal courts, and they were using this term called disgorgement. Have you seen that term yet?
Yeah, it's kind of like the I kind of break it down as like kind of the payback rule, 70-30 subsection B of the Business Protection Code.
Well, see, that yes, the word disgorgement means to vomit or to give up. Okay, But the question is, what are you giving up? Okay, so what is happening is that at this time, many state and federal courts are using the word disgorgement to mean all different kinds of things. They're using it to mean a penalty. They're using it to mean forfeiture, and which are both penal, and they're using it to also mean restitution. So like, let's say that you catch a bank robbery, he robs on the bank for 100 grand. You could say that what he's giving, ordered to give back to the bank, is disgorgement because he's giving something up, right? He's giving it back. You could also call it more accurately restitution. He's giving back what was taken that wasn't lawfully his. However, if you order that bank robber to give back $1 million when he only stole 100,000, then the remaining 900,000 aren't restitution or disgorgement. It's actually a penalty. Are you following me?
I'm with you, sir.
Okay. So if you read so while my case was in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the U.S. Supreme Court filed its opinion in the case of Liu v. SEC. That's L-I-U v. SEC for the Securities and Exchange Commission. And they realized that basically there's a big problem going on here with this meaning of this word that's just being made up and the definitions are all mismatched. So okay. They clarified it and they said disgorgement is an equitable action that only applies to a person's profits. Okay. So this becomes very important because when we go back to the initial Superior Court judgment in my case and we go to the Court of Appeal judgment, they both said that the judgment was disgorgement, an equitable remedy. So, okay, well, if that's the case, then how much profit did I make? And you go back to the trial and you find out that there was no evidence of any profit. What the judge did is he took the amount that the Humphreys paid me, let's just call it 930,000, or no, 848,000.
Okay.
And he made me pay it all back to them. Without any evidence of profit. So that involves a violation of due process because there was no evidence that I profited 848,000. And in fact, what had happened was that, my company and me as the qualifying individual and managing officer of my company had worked on the Humphreys project for over a year and a half. And contend that $930,000 in benefits had been returned to them. So to give you kind of a different example, let's say you hire me to build you a $1 million home. And so you give me the $1 million. I go out, buy the materials, and hire the laborers. We build you your $1 million house, and now you've got $1 million back, arguably, in materials and labor. So that is what... an equitable action for disgorgement requires is that you offset, if somebody gives you $1 million and you give it back, you have to offset that. And that's not what happened in the Superior Court judgment or the Court of Appeal judgment. What they basically said was, we're not even going to look at the fact that you gave them, the Humphreys, $1 million back. Give them another $1 million. But what they did is they represented that as disgorgement or equity when what it really was a penalty, just like the same in the bank robbery example. Now, if I had taken $1 million from the Humphreys and I didn't give them anything back, then no problem. Give them the $1 million back. But I gave them back $1 million in materials and labor or about that amount. And so for the judge to order me to pay another $1 million now became a penalty that he wasn't authorized to do. And so once it became a penalty, then the action went from something that could have been equitable to a penal/criminal action because now I'm being punished for performing work as a contractor without a license. Which is no different than if you go to 7028 of the Business and Professions Code. That's a criminal action. And basically, you have to evidence that the person did work without a license. So now what's happened by ordering this penalty and disguising it as disgorgement, that they transmuted this in from a civil case into a criminal case to punish me. So that's not allowed. I'll get to that in a minute. But even if it was allowed, then the excessive fines clause applies. So there you have to take into account a person's ability to pay it. then you also have to make sure that the fine is proportionate to the offense. Well, under the criminal statute of unlicensed contracting, that's 7028 again, the maximum fine for a first offense is $5,000. The fine that they imposed on me, which ultimately equated to about $930,000, was 40-something times that amount.
Okay.
So this is what I ultimately brought to Officer Mejia, and there's one other aspect of this, and that's that under our system, when you have a misdemeanor offense, like let's say driving without a license or contracting without a license or any other crime, okay, it has to be brought by the executive power, right? Private people can't go around criminally prosecuting other private people. Like, I can't pull someone over on the side of the road and say, you know, oh, you don't have a license. I'm filing, you know, a charge for 12,500 of the vehicle code and going to prosecute you for a misdemeanor offense. It's correct. The same thing here in this unlicensed contracting thing. There are ways that you can bring an action and it is civil, but once you start imposing criminal penalties, then it becomes a criminal action. So because this action was not brought by the state of California or anyone vested with executive power, that deprived the court of putting on even a trial, let alone awarding any punishment. And even if that trial were allowed to proceed, they would have to provide me the assistance of counsel. There would be a higher burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. I'd have a right to the trial by jury, a right to confront my accusers. All right. Of these things never happened.
Yeah, under due process.
Right. So precisely. Yes.
What? So, were you ever charged with a crime in this case?
No.
Okay.
So this whole thing. This is why it's kind of all. Everybody's saying, oh, you had a civil case. Yes, that's what it looks like. But what really happened was a criminal case disguised as a civil case. They changed the penalty, by not recognizing the value that I had returned to the Humphreys, the judgment against me became entirely punitive for violating the licensing laws. And as a result of that, it went from a civil action that's remedial to a criminal action that's punitive. And I was fined almost $1 million for allegedly not having a license.
Okay.
Would you like me to keep reading?
Yeah, if you want to continue to go through the report.
Okay. Okay.
What we're really looking for, and sir, I'm not going to cut you off. I want you to be able to explain. That's what we're here for. We want to basically get some fact-finding statements from you so we have a totality of everything that's going on so we can take this all and look at it, you know, with a fresh set of eyes for you. But as you're going through your report, I really want the specific facts of why Officer Mejia was dishonest to you.
I will absolutely get to that. I will get to that, okay? I'm going to make the summary of this going through the report as quickly possible. Okay.
And again, if you flip the page and you're going to, just let me know where you're at so I can follow along.
Okay. Okay, this doesn't pertain to Mejia, but on line 23 of page 2, he recognizes that the building permits were obtained by the Spartan Associates. Spartan, that's my company, and yes, we have evidence that the building permit was issued to Spartan as the contractor. It was not issued to me personally.
Okay.
So keep going down. I'm turning the page.
Okay, I'm on page 3.
Okay. Again, Mejia is just, it seems like, going through and summarizing cases that the judge Chafee, put in his report. And what they're focusing on at this point is not, they're focusing on whether I was an unlicensed contractor or not.
Okay.
So,
but Adam, isn't that what the court ultimately decided, is that you were operating as Adam Borecki independently, separate from your business? Is that correct?
Yes, they did. And okay. To my argument and with law, that's essentially irrelevant to all of this. Do okay. you understand why?
Explain it to me.
It's kind of like, let's say that you pulled me over, and then because I was speeding, and then you ripped me out of the car and fractured my skull by pounding my head on the ground. It's irrelevant whether what I was doing was within the law or not. The right. actions that were taken after that were not done with lawful authority. But it goes even kind of more detailed than that, because based on the way that this statute, 7031, not just B, but also A, it's been around for about 100 years in California. And there's 100 years of all of the judges in these cases acting without lawful authority. And it is to such a degree that they can't, because the case is not brought by someone vested with executive power, and there is no complaint filed on behalf of the people of the state of California, the judge cannot proceed to even have a trial upon who the contractor was with or anything. They're stopped. So he had no authority to even determine who the contract was with. So I'm on page.
When you say he, are you talking about the judge?
The judge, yes. And okay. the appellate justices, they had no authority to affirm it, because the judge never had authority to begin with. It would be something kind of like, let's say that you're driving down the road on patrol and you see someone wearing a pink shirt, and you sure. say, well, I don't like that, I'm going to pull them over. Well, there's no statute or other authority that gives you the authority to pull that person over. So I'm sure you've heard of the doctrine of the fruit of poisonous tree. Sure. You can't commit a crime and then have everything as a result of that become valid. The initial thing that you did was a crime, and so everything after that has to get thrown out. So that's ultimately what I'm sharing, is that the arguments that I'm making, because they violate constitutional law, and judges are not allowed to violate the Constitution, they go to the authority of the judge to do everything in this case. So I'm on page 4 now.
Yes, sir. I'm with you.
Again, I'm looking at line 24, 25, 26. He's reiterating that, basically I was found to be individually contracting, not with my company.
Okay.
Then he goes on at the end on page 35.
Hey, can I interrupt you real quick, Adam?
Of course.
So that 24, 25, 26, and kind of back on page 3 when Officer Mejia is putting his reports, he's just reflecting, and I think you'll agree with me, just basically what the court findings have found. Officer Mejia is not making his assumptions on you. He's basically writing what the judges have found and what they have established during your judicial proceedings.
That's a very important point, but ultimately right. what it appears to me that he does later on is he ultimately doesn't address any of my allegations, and he finds with the judge. I'm going to get to that.
Let's get there. Okay.
Okay. So on the end of page 4, we have Judge Chafee stated that the California Supreme Court's ruling on the issue of unlicensed contracting is draconian in its effect. Do you know what the word draconian means?
Draconian is, I believe it's like outdated, correct?
That could be part of it, but it really means harsh and excessive.
There you go. Okay.
So essentially, he's admitting that the penalty that they're imposing is harsh and excessive, and that's exactly what the excessive fines clause is intended to protect against.
Okay.
And then he goes on to say, but that was the intent of the legislature. This is something that I've noticed that the trial judge and the appellate justices have done in this case and other cases is they just blame it on the legislature. When they are, the court, the judges are actually, I believe the term has been called palladiums of liberty. They're supposed to act as a check and balance on unlawful legislative action. They're not supposed to just say, yeah, whatever the legislature says goes. And that's essentially what I see him doing here. Not, this has nothing to do with Mejia, but this is what he's putting in his report.
I understand.
So I'm turning the page to page 5.
Okay, I'm with you.
Okay, now he goes into what I allege.
Okay.
I allege that it's a criminal prosecution in disguise of a civil action. I provided 7028, which is the misdemeanor statute. And what's important to note here is that 7028 and 7031 basically require the same finding. So the issue is the person a licensed or not?
Correct.
So, like, what's the difference between a criminal and a civil complaint if the claim is the same? What the difference is to keep something civil is it can't impose a fine for committing a public offense. That's what criminal actions are for. So, moving on here, he summarizes what my allegations are. And what's important to note about here is that he never addresses these. He just writes them down. The point of his investigation is to actually make an impartial and an independent determination after collecting the statements of the victim and the suspect and or any witnesses. And what I found throughout his report is that he doesn't do that. He just takes down witness statements, basically my statement and the judge's statement, and says, unfounded. I'm moving to the next page, which is page 6.
Adam, one question. So on page 5, sir, and I know you're just glossing through this, and you probably know this report a lot better than I do. On page 5, anything that's typed out in here that you can see that is dishonest by Mr. Oscar Mejia? Or
no.
Anything he's actually on here?
As a result of allegation 1. Yes. No, there is not anything dishonest about this. I sent Mejia an email, and this is, he basically copied and pasted this from the email.
Okay.
So I'm
What email is that? Do you have that date by any chance?
One second. I need to go to my computer. I can get it to you.
No worries.
What basically happened was he was telling me at one point that he was having a hard time putting all he was struggling with putting all of this together.
Okay.
And so I helped him by writing, what I would write as a police report to help guide him with statements of fact and law. And, you know, we talked about it and I said, I'm not submitting this, that this is what you should write or shouldn't write. It's just a proposal of what I would write if I was investigating this case. And
understood.
So it looks like what he did was he took this section from that. I'm going to search for it right now. Okay, January 25th, 2024.
He said the 25th, sir?
Yes, January 25th, 2024.
Okay.
And I can forward that email to you if you'd like.
I have them all, sir. I just want to make sure that I'm looking at a specific date.
Okay. That email is titled Berecki Report Updated 01-25-24.
Okay, sir.
Okay. So I'm moving on to page 6.
Okay. We're here with you.
He recognizes that I said that I already returned the amount paid based upon work that was done to the Humphreys property. That's on lines 5 and 6 and 7.
Okay.
Um, Then he goes on at 8 and 9 to say that it was punishment, recognizes what I'm saying about it being punishment because the money was already returned.
Okay, I see that where Adam Brecky believes punishment was not authorized. Okay, I'm with you.
Right. I'm moving to line 11 now. Okay, I want to stop here and say that one of the things that I provided to Mejia was basically what I would describe as my investigation report, and that's Supreme Court case 22A426. And that's nowhere referenced in here. And that outlines, basically Mejia could have copied and pasted that into his report and then said, I either agree with this or don't agree with this, and here's why, which isn't there. But on line 11, he goes here and he says, Adam Brecky cited Lewis and Queens. I don't know where I cited that. He doesn't say. Okay. Adam Brecky interpreted the case to state that, okay, that's what the case holds. Okay, so that's not what I interpreted the case to say. That's what it actually says. And what this means is that there's a jurisdiction of law called equity. And it's not about punishment. In fact, if you impose punishment in equity, the court doesn't have authority to do that. Equity is essentially, it deals with fraud and fundamental fairness and restoring the status quo. So what that means is, like, you could say restitution is often an equitable action, such that, like, if the bank robber stole $1 million, he has to, in equity, give the $1 million back. Okay? So what this case right here is citing is that the California Supreme Court is saying that 7031 actions, whether they're A or B, are not equitable. The importance of that is that the Court of Appeal the trial court judge Chafee and the Court of Appeal justices all said that the action against me was equitable. Now, they have a duty in law to follow the decisions of higher courts, meaning the California Supreme Court, and so they're refusing to do that. And so even though the Supreme Court is saying you can't resort to equitable considerations, meaning this isn't an equitable action, they then claim that the judgment against me was an equitable remedy, and essentially that the case was an equity when it wasn't. Let's see here. Then he goes on line 15, he says, Adam Brecky explained that the case demonstrated that the courts are not allowed to consider the value of materials and labor. That's not true. I said that they have to do that. Otherwise, it will convert the action from a remedial, equitable one into a penal one. Okay. On line 16, I don't know what he's talking about. That whole statement can be scratched out because that's not true. He stated that if an unlicensed contractor received money but didn't complete the work, then Business and Professions Code Section 7031B would apply appropriately. Yes, generally speaking, yes. Mm-hmm. However, if the unlicensed contractor returned the money or compensation as value to the homeowner, then a judge would be relieved of his authority to issue any relief through Business and Professions Code because it would be an arbitrary penalty. Yes, 100%. He's right on. So the first two sentences on lines 15 and 16, they're incorrect, but the rest of it he gets.
Okay.
I'm on line 23 now. Let's see here. Okay, he says, in this case, I'm on line 24, the Supreme Court of Arizona found that the full amount of payments returned would constitute economic loss for restitution purposes. That's not correct. That's not what the case found. What that case was about and it's one that I cited on appeal to the Fourth District, was that this guy got convicted for unlicensed contracting, and the county came after him and said, well, you have to give back everything you were paid. And whoever the parties were argued and said, wait a minute, no. If he did some of the work, that has to be accounted for. So that's what the Supreme Court of Arizona found in this case, which is what I submitted to the Fourth District Court of Appeal in my appeal, but they refused to recognize that case. They didn't discuss it. They didn't cite it, nothing. So whatever he says on line 24 and 25, that's not true. That's not what the holding said. That's not what I said.
Hey, Adam, is this the case where it was basically cited where an unlicensed contractor, even if you've been paid all the money, the person who hired you, I'm just saying you in general,
right,
can sue to get all their money back, even if that customer is satisfied with the work and the work is done well? Is that this case? Do you know?
No. This Town of Gilbert case, there is no, so I want to address what you said, but I want to address the case. This is not that case.
Okay.
This case, the Town of Gilbert case, deals with, this case came before the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court's case of Liu, where it defined what disgorgement is. So in this Gilbert case, which was, I think in the early 2000s, the issue is what is this disgorgement thing? And how does it work in law? Does it mean you don't take into account any value that's been returned, or that you do have to? And so what was so significant about this case is they said, like, it would be absurd and troubling, just as it is in my case, if the contractor already returned value and you made them return it again. So that was what was so significant about this case. It basically summarizes exactly what Mejia wrote above in like 15 or 17 through 21. It was, you know, one of the authorities that I gave him on that matter.
Okay.
Now, one thing that I want to point out here is that, because he goes into conclusion, my conclusion next, he leaves out the entire Liu v. SEC case, where the U.S. Supreme Court defined disgorgement. He leaves out the entire Court of Appeal opinion, stating that the judgment against me was an equitable remedy. And in law, the Court of Appeal opinion is the highest law in the case. So it's not technically Chafee's judgment that's the law. It's the Court of Appeal opinion that's the law. So that was incredibly relevant to this case, because that's where they said it's not a penalty, the excessive fines clause doesn't apply, it's disgorgement. So he leaves out Liu v. SEC, he leaves out the Court of Appeal opinion, and then he leaves out another case that I can give you. Have you seen the Eisenberg case? Does that ring a bell?
Sounds familiar. Maybe did you quote it in one of your emails or something?
I know I had given it to Mejia multiple times. It's in that email of 125/24 when I sent him the proposed like report.
Yes, sir.
It's in there. Basically, this case came 3 years or so after my case, 2 years I think, in 2020, and the issue was, what is this? What is being imposed by Business and Professions Code 7031B? The question came up because what statute of limitations applies to it? Is it a penalty? Is it a forfeiture? Is it some other type of remedial action? And so the question was, does it have a 1-year statute of limitations, a 2-year, a 3-year, a 4-year? So they don't even know what it is that they're doing. So the question came up, well, what is this thing? And so the Eisenberg case addressed it. And what they said was, it's a penalty. It imposes a penalty. And the 1-year statute of limitations applies to it. Okay. Now, that is also very significant because if you have a penalty, the excessive fines clause applies. It's punitive. Okay. And that is contrary to the opinion in my case. There's also another case that Mejia later mentions it, but he doesn't mention it with regard to what the Supreme Court found. That's the M.W. Erector's case.
Okay.
If you look at that case, it says in there that the court determined that the legislature intended a stiff all-or-nothing penalty, meaning punishment. It's not disgorgement. It's not an equitable remedy. It's a penalty. You're punished for violating the licensing laws. So those are all essentially law cases. The California Supreme Court case, the other Court of Appeal opinion, the Eisenberg opinion, and the U.S. Supreme Court case are all opinion, are all law that I gave to Mejia so that he could make an analysis and determination. And all of those have been left out.
Okay.
Okay. So then he goes on to, I'm on line 27 on page 6.
I'm with you.
He was unfairly punished. Yes, that's correct. Okay. Now on line 28, one of the other allegations of fraud that I have is that the judge, Judge Chafee in the Superior Court, the judgment order says damages on it. Well, damages in law are awarded when you have an injury in fact. Meaning, like, if I crashed into your car and you had your property was damaged $10,000, you bring the pictures and the evidence and show that the repairs cost $10,000. Okay? Remember that they're saying that this is an action for disgorgement, and now on the judgment order, they're saying it's damages. There's another problem. There were no injuries evidenced at trial. That is something that I also brought up to Mejia, and I gave him the reporter's transcript, the person like typing down everything that was said, and I said they didn't evidence damages, so they can't have a judgment for damages. So that's what line 28 is saying. He's kind of switching, you know, thought processes here and saying Adam Berkey explained that nowhere in the trial were damages mentioned. There was no evidence of improper work or damages to the Humphreys property due to Adam Berkey's work. Well, I'm not saying that I know, as far as I know, no one ever did, no, the trial judge, Chafee, never determined that I did any work on the project. They determined that they said that I contracted with the Humphreys, but who does the work is something very different, right? Like I can hire a licensed contractor to do the work, which, you know, there's not been any determination by a court about that. And my stance is that my licensed company did the work. And again, my stance is that's not illegal. But here, Mejia says due to Adam Berkey's work, and no one's ever determined that. So I don't know where he arrives at that conclusion. Due to Judge Chafee not recognizing any of the work Adam Berkey performed at the property, again, no one made a determination that I performed the work on the property, as far as I know. The determination was that I contracted with the Humphreys. No, there's no evidence on the record that I installed a faucet or I personally did that or, you know, put in a new electrical panel or put on a new roof, nothing. Okay, the other issue is that Mejia doesn't address it here, but if licensed contractors perform the work, where's the law violation? I still can't figure that out.
Right.
Adam Berkey believes that I'm on line 34. I'm sorry.
I'm with you, sir.
Adam Berkey believes the punishment, if there was one, should be Business and Professions Code 7028. Okay. That's not true. I don't believe Well, he says if there was to be one. I don't believe there's any punishment because honestly, don't think I did anything wrong. But what I think he's trying to say here is that because, at least as far as I interpret it, if I was alleged of doing unlicensed contracting work, the maximum fine is $5,000, not
$930,000. Okay.
I'm on line 36. Adam Berkey does not agree that he was fined a significant amount more than $5,000. That's obviously not true. I was fined, you know, like 46 or 42 times that amount. And then I actually say that I argue that that is an excessive fine and a violation of the excessive fines clause. Not only the Eighth Amendment that he has here, but Article 1, Section, I believe it's 17 of the California Constitution, which is our excessive fines clause. So then he goes on. I'm on page 7. I'm sorry. I moved to the next page. The fine should have been proportionate to the offense, and he should have the ability to pay it. What he's saying right here are basically, if you go, I sent you a case this morning that I also sent Mejia or told him about. It's the case of People versus Cowan. And it deals with whether the excessive fines clause applies only in criminal cases or it also applies in civil cases. And mm-hmm. to basically summarize it, if the intent of what's going on in the civil case is to punish somebody, the excessive fines clause applies there as well. So even if we say that this wasn't a criminal case, like I'm alleging, and it was a civil case, the excessive fines clause still applies. And so what I think Mejia is doing here on lines 1 to 2 is he's saying these are the requirements that if a judge imposes a fine, he has to go, okay, I have to make a lawful determination of whether this is proportionate to the offense. Well, in the criminal unlicensed contracting, the legislature said that $5,000 is the maximum penalty. So it would be highly troubling and absurd if the judge would award a fine and call it proportionate, a fine that was 40-something times beyond what the legislature had determined was the maximum fine. And then the other thing that a judge has to do is take into account somebody's ability to pay it. So like in the People versus Cowan case that I emailed this morning, I think the person was homeless and they didn't have a dime. And so even ordering them to pay $20 in court fees was excessive because they didn't have it. So in this case, the total judgment against me was about 40 times. If you multiply 5,000 times 186, that gets 930,000. Where the 40 part comes in is that's my qualifying net worth. So the judgment was over 40 times my net worth.
Understood. Okay.
My qualifying net worth. So there's no possibility that I could pay that.
Okay.
Then he says, because Judge Chafee did not take those things into consideration, he lacked the authority to fine or punish Adam Berkey. Great. Yes, that's my allegation. But again, Mejia doesn't ever determine whether Chafee did or did not take these things into consideration.
Okay.
So then he goes into on line 5 to say that they don't have the executive authority. Yes, that's where I'm saying that because of the fact that I was being fined for committing a public offense, meaning contracting without a license, that's where this had to be prosecuted by at the executive of California, meaning the district attorney or the attorney general. And these people, their attorney and the Humphreys are not vested with any of that power. Yes, I agree that Judge Chafee should have dismissed the case. Penal Code 1382 requires that he do that. So does the California Constitution. Criminal nature, he was entitled to the protections given in a criminal proceeding. Yes, such as the assistance of counsel. Yes. And any denial of any one of these things is essentially a violation of due process that deprives the judge of authority to either conduct the trial or to render any judgment. because those protections haven't been recognized. So Mejia is saying here that I'm out alleging those things, but again, he doesn't actually determine if they were given to me or not, and if they were required to be given to me. So, which is what I came to him for. That was my allegation, that all, each of these is a violation, a separate violation of a constitutional right. And so that's another thing, is that he makes a determination that there's no crime been committed, but he never makes a determination as to any of the deprivations of rights that he's recognizing, I'm alleging, have been violated here. And that's also why I came to him. Because I can't, if the judiciary is not going to abide its duty and afford me relief, that's the job of the of law enforcement, of the executive branch, is to intervene to ensure those rights are protected. So ultimately what I'm saying with regard to Mejia also, that I haven't stated yet, is that because he didn't do all these things, he violated due process. My right to complain to the executive and have this full, fair, and impartial and independent determination made. So I'm going to Judge Chafee's statement, and I'm going down to line 23 on page 7.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, I, in my 240B, I put that I asked Mejia to record this, the interview, and so there would be no dispute. And I don't think that he did that. And so on line 23, he states, Judge Chafee confirmed that Business and Professions Code 70, Section 7031 is not criminal and has, quote, no penalty attached. Well, but it is punitive. So that is a disaster. If it has no penalty attached, it can't possibly be punitive. It's kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I also asked Mejia about in an email after I got this report is, what did Judge Chafee actually say? Because you stop the quotations there. It says, you know, Did he say that Business and Professions Code is not criminal? That's not in quotation. But what he has is no penalty attached in quotations, and then he stops the quotations and then says, but it is punitive. So I have no idea what Judge Chafee said, but I'm assuming that all of this is that, what Judge Chafee said. Then he goes on to say draconian. Again, if you look that word up in the dictionary, it means harsh and excessive. So it's like, I don't, yeah. Then on line 27 to 28, he says, in response to Adam Berkey's claim that he should have been charged with Business and Professions Code 7028 because it was his first offense, Judge Chafee stated he was not charged with that. Well, I never said that I should have been charged with anything. And so I don't know where he got that. Mejia got that.
Okay.
Again, on line 30, he says, I filed a civil action against the Humphreys. I did not. Okay. Then
let me clarify something. So from what I read from the court notes and emails and stuff, that you did file a lawsuit against the Humphreys for $82,000 for non-payment.
No, that was my company, Spartan. My company, I've alleged the whole time that my company that was licensed did all the work. And so that's why my company brought that action.
Understood. Okay. All right.
So I understand if I understand if he's messing that up. I mean, I think after a 2.5 year investigation, that should be pretty clear to him. But I'm not trying to beat him up over that. I mean, what I'm just pointing out are things that aren't factual and correct. And, you know, I mean, look, if you got 2.5 years to do something, I think you can get it right. But as far as his I can't say that this is dishonesty. It seems like he's confused as to what's going on here. The other stuff that I've gotten to and that I'm going to get to is what I feel is dishonest.
Okay.
So I don't want to make a big deal out of this. I just want you you know, hey, wait a minute. He's not even, like, the basic facts of the case are not even being stated. Okay. Then he goes on, and I guess this is Judge Chafee's statement, that he's saying that on line 33 was a civil case, not a criminal case. Okay, well, again, my allegation is that's not true because he was imposing a fine. Okay, again, he says on line 34 that I brought forth a civil case. I didn't. And the Humphreys filed for civil damages. This isn't that big a deal, but they didn't. They had those claims, but then they didn't bring, they separated them and they didn't bring them to trial. So they had a claim for damages, but they did what's called a motion for severance and they severed those before trial. So the only thing that we went to trial for was whether I was licensed or not. Now, this brings up something that's pretty interesting because I have evidence in the court record that the Humphreys said that the reason they're doing this is because their damages, let's just type it, I think they said their maximum damages that they alleged were $530,000. The judgment that they would get under this disgorgement thing would be almost double that. And they wouldn't have to prove any damages. But yet they submitted a judgment order to be signed by the judge for damages. Do you get what I'm saying there?
Yes, I get it.
Okay. So, yeah, they didn't bring an action against me for damages.
Okay.
Not as far as what went to trial. That's more accurate.
Okay. Because they did file a cross complaint on you when Spartan tried to sue for $82,000, that's when they filed their action, correct?
Yes, they crossed, you're exactly right. They cross complained against me and Spartan and said, look, whoever did this work messed it all up.
Okay.
That was their deal. But then this 70-31 thing, what I think happened is that I think that they were plotting a strategy and that they were going to ambush me with this about a month before trial. After we had already gone through depositions, after we had gone through discovery, everything. And so it was a dirty trick. So right about 1 month before trial, they get the court's permission to file an amended complaint or cross complaint. And then they put this new action under 7031B as their first action. And then right after that, they sever all of their remaining claims, include their claims for damages, from this one thing. And then they say in their papers, the reason that we're doing this basically is because we don't need to bring any claims for damages because our award here is basically going to be double what we ever could have got for that.
Okay.
So I think these people are really sick and twisted, but that's another subject. So on page 8, line 1,
okay,
it says Adam Berkey made a claim that his trial was a civil case disguised as a criminal trial. Judge Chafee confirmed that Adam did not raise this issue at trial, and even if he raised it at his appeal, it would have been barred because it was not raised by trial. Okay. First off, some of that is a lie and it's not even true law. So I didn't raise this issue at trial. I raised that I was excessively fined at trial. And when I raised that issue, the judge fined me. I think it was over $1,000 for abuse of discovery.
Okay.
And, which is egregiously unlawful and even criminal. That's another $1,000 that I was supposed to pay. But another part of this is this whole thing was fraud. If what I am discovering based upon what the California Supreme Court said in MW Erectors, what the U.S. Supreme Court said in Lew v. SEC, and what the California Court of Appeals said in Eisenberg, these are all holdings that are supporting what I'm saying. That this action is a penalty and that the judgment that gets imposed under it is a fine that qualifies for the excessive fines clause. So I want to be clear that I'm not just out on some limb making all this stuff up trying to convince everybody. This is what the highest court essentially in our state and country are saying.
Okay.
So, and so what's gone on is that the judges, so 7031B was enacted around 2001. So it's been on the books for over 20 something years. And not a single judge that I've been aware of has ever recognized that it's imposing a penalty, and literally until now. So every single judgment, the people that go into court thinking that this is what's going on, they're being defrauded because they're being twisted to think that this is a civil case when it's really not. It's a covert, hidden criminal case disguised fraudulently as a criminal case disguised as a civil case. So of course I'm not going to raise that issue because I'm confused as to what in the hell is going on. And the fraud is being perpetrated on me. That's the whole point of fraud, is that the person is confused as to what's going on. So then he goes on to say, at trial, even if he raised this issue on appeal, it would have been barred because it was not raised at trial. Okay, that's a lie. In law, you can challenge the authority of a court or a judge at any time, even at the first time on appeal, if your challenge goes to the judge's authority. That's the whole point of the appellate process. I mean, it would be pretty absurd if a judge did something illegal and because you were defrauded and didn't know what the judge did, you went to appeal and said, hey, this judge did something illegal, and they go, oh, sorry, you had your chance. No, that's the entire point of appeal. So I have no doubt that Chafee told him this because Chafee's an idiot, but I don't know why. I mean, it seems like we're still on Chafee's statement. So I don't think this is what Mejia's saying, but it's. I think ultimately that Mejia buys into this BS. Okay, on line 7, Judge Chafee acknowledged he lost any jurisdiction on the case when Adam filed his notice of appeal. Judge Chafee is retired and has no legal authority to handle the case. All of that is correct. However, what's not correct about it is that a judge can file a paper in any case and say they made a mistake. In fact, they have a duty to do so. And he has been provided with the Supreme Court law on this case, and he's not done that. So he does have a degree of legal authority to go in and say that he made a mistake, and he's not doing it. Again, on line 11 and 12, he said, since he didn't raise this issue appeal, blah, blah, blah. Even if he had brought forth the issue at trial, he was wrong. Well, not according to the U.S. Supreme Court and the California Supreme Court. And yeah, so then we go on to, again, he says the same thing on line 17, 18. Okay. So I haven't brought this issue up, but this is another issue that I raised to Mejia and that he does not address here. So
where are you at, Adam?
I'm on line 20.
Okay.
So Mejia doesn't address this anywhere in his report. So what happened basically after the judgment, 90 days after the trial court judgment, because I was unable to pay that fine, obviously it was more than 40 times my net worth, the legislature has enacted a statute that your license automatically becomes suspended or revoked because you haven't paid it. Well, that's additional punishment. And there's a whole bunch of implications with that because the legislature can't do that because a judge is required to do that. There's required to be a judicial determination of rights. And when there isn't that judicial determination of rights, it's called a bill of pains and penalties. They impose punishment, but you don't get a judge to determine your rights. So that whole statute, I raised that unconstitutionality of that with Mejia, and the fact that I was never given a hearing, not even an administrative hearing, let alone a judicial hearing, that whole licensing suspension was unlawful. They have to give you a hearing. And if they're going to impose a penalty, again, the excessive fines clause applies to that. Okay. So that Mejia never addressed that at all. And that is very significant because I haven't done the exact figure in my mind, but there's over $3 million in lost earnings because I was suspended from working as a general contractor. And what happens is they don't just suspend your one license, they suspend your ability to act as a qualifying individual for any license. So yeah, I couldn't just go get another license in a different company name. Everything gets suspended or revoked. And it went on like that for, I think, more than 6 years while I tried to get all of this fixed. So my damages aren't just the $930,000 judgment against me. The judgment is now up to over close to $4 million because they've punished me by not allowing me to work in that capacity.
Okay.
And were
you able to ever get your license back?
Not yet. I was ultimately forced into bankruptcy, and I filed bankruptcy, I think, in late 2022 or 2023. And that should have voided the licensing determination. But if you go online and look, it's still suspended
okay.
or revoked. Yeah. So they have not reversed that, even though they've been given notice of it.
So
I haven't made this point, but it just came to my mind. So one of the things that I have shared about is that I talked about the executive branch having to prosecute this case if, in fact, what I'm saying is true, and that I was basically fined and punished for committing this public offense or crime. If that's the case, then what's really happening is that the executive power of California is being usurped. It's being exercised by private parties. And then once that action takes place, the executive power is then coming in and using its power to create this licensing suspension or revocation without any authority. So the executive power of California is basically being usurped twice. So that's the importance of coming to the executive branch to notify the executive branch of these crimes that are happening. And if you look at, I gave you a link to the video that I've created. You can see the history, and that Supreme Court case has a lot of the documents in there. My website has them. Every time I've gone to the police, they said, sorry, we're not doing anything about it. We're not investigating judges. Case closed. And really, I mean, the executive branch has a duty to ensure that its power under the system of separation of powers and checks and balances, that its power is not being stolen and used unlawfully. And that's exactly what's going on. So, So on line 20, Adam Berkey claims that the state of California lacked the constitutional authority to suspend the Spartan Associates and Adam Berkey's general contractor's license. I didn't have a general contractor's license, except to say that my name was on Spartan's license as its qualifier. So I don't know what he's talking about there. I did try to get a license in my name, and they refused it. But I didn't tell Mejia about that. So I'm not sure where he got that. Judge Chafee confirmed he did not suspend Adam Berkey's license. Well, not directly, but indirectly. And I would argue that a judge has a duty to see what all the penalties are in relation to something, not just what he's doing at that moment in court. Judge Chafee, yes, blah, blah, blah. Okay, basically on lines 24 and 25, it sounds like Chafee's just saying, well, we found that he did this, and because he did that, that's why he gets all this punishment. Well, again, my contention is, even if I did it, he has no authority to even put on a trial, because it has to be brought by the executive branch. Okay, Judge Chafee, I'm on line 28. Judge Chafee believes that Adam Berkey's work was not what he promised the Humphreys. Okay, Judge Chafee looked at pictures from the work completed by Adam Berkey and did not complete the work properly. Again, I don't know where he's getting this, because this is not against Mejia, but there was no evidence that I'm aware of any work that I did or that any work was done incorrectly. Those issues never made it to trial.
There's no pictures presented in court from the Humphreys or anything?
No. I mean, that's why I'm saying there was no damages. So if they said I did something wrong, well, like, where is it? But that was not, remember I told you they filed that motion for severance before trial, and we only went to trial on the 7031 issue. All of those issues were severed by them, the damages claims. So this issue that came before the trial court was not whether I did any work wrong or not. So Chafee's lying again here. You can't even bring that evidence in because there's no claim. The issue was strictly whether I was unlicensed or not.
Okay.
Okay, now we go on to the next page, which is Mejia's conclusion.
We're on page 9 with you, Adam.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. So again, he starts off saying I brought the civil case, which I didn't do. That was Spartan. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, he says the judgment was based on prior cases with similar contractual situations. Okay, I don't know what your opinion of this is, but I'm saying that this conclusion is the extent of what Mejia is determining based on his 2.5-year investigation, including interviewing me, reviewing all the documents, reviewing the court cases, and interviewing Chafee. Are we on the same page with that? I mean, you don't have to agree with me that's how I'm interpreting it. That's the basis of my allegation is after all that, we have a couple of paragraphs here. And so okay. I'm taking anything that he's saying in here is his independent determination. After all this information has been given to him, this is what he comes up with.
Okay.
The judgment was based on prior cases with similar contractual situations. What cases is he referring to? And he leaves out, I think what he's talking about is he's talking about the issue of whether I was the contracting party with the Humphreys. That's how I'm interpreting that. So what?
Okay.
Again, even if I did it, where's the judge's authority? And even if I did, if I'm going to be punished, the maximum fine is $5,000, not $930. So that statement right there, I don't know what he's talking about. He doesn't elaborate on it. He's not saying what he's referring to contractual situation. So I guess he's focusing on the contract. But again, while I brought that up, that was not my complaint to him. I don't care about that. The question is, did the judge have authority to excessively fine me? So let's see if he addresses that. Adam Berkey appealed the case. Yep. Okay, so now what I want to talk about again is he didn't interview the justices of the Fourth District Court of Appeal. Their opinion is not even in here. It's not discussed anywhere. And that's the actual law of this case. And the judgment was affirmed. Well, again, the judgment says it's for damages, but they never affirmed a complaint for damages. They affirmed a complaint saying it was for disgorgement. So then Adam Berkey filed appeals to the California Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court, but the appeals were denied. Yes, I allege that they were unlawfully denied. That's nowhere to be found. Adam Berkey's appeals were denied because appellate courts do not consider new evidence. I don't know where he got that. I'd stop that. I think he got this from what Chafee told him, and that's a lie. And what's interesting is that is actually law. He needs to cite the law for it, and it doesn't exist, not in this context. So because Adam Berkey's appeals were denied because appellate courts do not consider new evidence. That is 99%. On one hand, that's 99% true, but on the other, it's not. I wasn't presenting new evidence to them. I was saying that the judge had no authority. There's a big difference.
Okay.
So an appeal is not considered a new trial. Yes, so what? The allegations Adam Berkey brought forth cannot have been disputed in an appellate court because he did not raise those issues at the original trial. I did raise them at the original trial. I told him that I did. I gave him the documents that I did. And even if I didn't, remember that I said that in law, you can challenge a judge's authority even for the first time on appeal. So this whole statement, 11 on line 11 and through 13, that's not law. And again, I think he got it from the four times he wrote it from what Chafee said. And it's just not true.
Okay.
In order for Adam Berkey to present his new allegations, Adam Berkey would be required to file a new lawsuit against the Humphreys. That's not true either. What's the appellate process for? Contracting, I'm on line 17. Contracting without a license is a misdemeanor offense, yes. During the civil case, no criminal charges were filed on Adam Berkey for contracting without a license by the district attorney's charge. I agree. So then how was I fined $930,000 for contracting without a license when he says that contracting without a license is a misdemeanor?
Okay.
Big trouble, big problem. Based on this investigation, again, I want to note that he doesn't address the Liu case here. He doesn't address the M.W. Rector's case finding it's a penalty. He doesn't address the Eisenberg case, all of which substantiate everything I'm saying and the opposite of what he's saying here and the opposite of what Chafee is saying here. What I think is going on is that because Judge Chafee is a judge, he basically went with what Judge Chafee said and didn't actually, as I've said, do an investigation. We don't find anything in this conclusion about my issue challenging that it was a penalty and not disgorgement. We don't see the Liu v. SEC case. We don't see anything dealing with whether this was an excessive fine or not and whether any of those protections were recognized. These are all the heart of what I came to him with this complaint about. And they're not addressed. And so based on this investigation, Adam Berkey's claim of grand theft committed against him by Judge Chafee was not substantiated. Well, why? Why? It's not just because he said so. What I gave him all of these, the highest law of our land is the U.S. Supreme Court. And if that's saying that what I'm saying is correct, how is Mejia coming up with a different conclusion? He's not actually following the law. So any additional pertinent information presented at a later date will be added to a supplemental report. Okay, so I got this report on whatever date I said in my 240 that I got it, and I wrote Mejia an email, and I said, hey, bro, there's some serious things wrong with your report. Can you address them? No response. Crickets.
Okay.
And so then when, as you'll read in the 240 or you've read already, that's when I sent it to a supervisor and I said, hey, what's going on here? No response. That's when I ended up filing the complaint with Sacramento. And then that complaint was dismissed. And then here we are now. So I have another page of notes. I already spoke that he never interviewed the Fourth District Court of Appeal justices. A lot of injury has happened to me as a result of him taking this 2.5 years to do this. So that's another thing I want to bring up. And not intervening to stop this because I'm not the only one. Actually, there was somebody else that I'm aware of that's in a court case right now that involves 7031B, and they made a complaint to him, and he's never even called the person back. That person's name is Pierre Prenga.
He made a complaint to who?
Mejia. He sent him an email saying, I'm an additional victim of this crime, and I would like to file a complaint. And Mejia never responded to it. He told me, I'm too busy. I don't have time for that.
Yeah, Adam, can you give me that guy's name again that filed the complaint?
Yes, Pierre, P-I-E-R.
Okay.
Prenga, P-R-E-N-G-A. Let me see here. Pierre at...
Was he part of your case?
No. He's got his own thing going on, and this crooked attorney is trying to bring that, was trying to bring this 7031 claim against him, and
okay.
he had to spend $400,000 to defend against it.
Adam, Mike here, is that the attorney on the Pringa case the same, one in the same as the one the Humphreys used?
No, she's another corrupt lunatic. Let's see here. And I'm looking for. I'm trying to find the email. I have Pierre sent it to me. That he sent to.
Well, yeah, Adam, while you're looking at that, so we can, I don't want to keep you on the phone all day. We've been on this set for an hour and a half. Can I ask you a few more questions while you're looking for that?
Yes. Do you want Pierre's phone number really quick? I have that.
Sure, you can give it to me.
Okay. It is 818-667-7768.
Okay.
And I will make a note, Pierre's email. Okay, go ahead.
So thank you for going over that report with us in fine detail. Kind of opens up a few more questions for me, though. So, and then my commander's going to have a few questions for you, too. Besides what you've provided, Adam, through emails and stuff through me and through your and I correspondence and what you sent to Officer Mejia and to Santa Ana CHP, do you have any other documents, recordings, or other evidence to support your claim of dishonesty against Mejia?
Do you have the recording that's on my website of my initial interview with him?
The recording from your website?
Yes. Do you know about my website?
I do not.
Okay. It's called thespiritoflaw.com.
Okay. Is the interview on there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So have
any,
you
anything else? Any other documents? So you just said you have that recording. Anything else, Adam, that you can think of to make your claim against Oscar Mejia?
Nothing other than that. What I've provided to you in all of this.
Okay.
Yeah. I have something written here that I will kind of go over in just a minute, but. Have you watched the video that I created?
No. I don't. I didn't. The first time I've heard of your website.
Okay. It's in the CHP 240B, I believe.
Okay. Okay.
And so if you go on there, you will find the Supreme Court brief that I gave to Mejia. I do not know what is in your documents and what is not. So when you ask me anything more, well, I don't know what's in there and what's not. So I can't accurately say yes or no. But if you want a summary of my work, you can go on the homepage of thespiritoflaw.com is the Supreme Court basically application I made to them for an emergency to stop all of this before I filed bankruptcy. And that has all of the cases listed in it. It has the explanation about everything. It shows how the crime's being committed. It shows other cases that are similar to mine where these exorbitant, it's just absolute insanity. In fact,
okay.
So that's in there. And then if you watch the video that's there, you can click on it and watch it. It will evidence a lot of the things that I've shared with you here, but also my complaints to law enforcement and that law enforcement is turning a blind eye to it. And if you go to the exhibits, you will see that there's a list of exhibits. There's exhibit E, which is audible exhibits. And you can scroll down to exhibit E28.
Okay, I'll take a look at it.
That's my complaint to Mejia.
Okay.
It's like an hour and 15 minutes. So I have that, and I don't have it in front of me. These things are not uploaded, but I do have numerous recordings of calls that I made with him over the 2.5 years. I would say there's probably anywhere from 5 to 10 of those.
Okay. A few more questions, Adam. I know we've been on the phone for a little bit. I appreciate your patience and taking the time with us. Pretty direct question here. What resolution or action are you seeking regarding your complaint against Officer Mejia for dishonesty and for his report investigation?
Well, it's not just dishonesty, as I shared in one of my responses to you. He's violated due process, and he's not intervening to protect my constitutional rights. And because of this dishonesty and he did not do, in my opinion, a full, fair, impartial, and independent investigation, and that is continuing to cause me harm and damages. And so what I would like Officer Mejia to do, I'm not even sure if he's capable of doing it, but I would like the California Highway Patrol to do a full, fair, impartial, and investigation based upon the actual evidence from courts of law, apply the law to the facts of this case, and determine if a crime is being committed upon me and many other people. And then if so, take action.
Okay.
That's it. I mean, but as far as he's concerned, I do not feel that he did I've given you the reasons why I don't think he did a full, fair, impartial, and independent investigation. His conclusion is a joke. And the other 8 pages of the report are just basically witness statements. He didn't address the claims that I made to him. And so for him to say that this is, not substantiated, especially when he didn't interview the other 3 suspects and he didn't take into account any of the actual law on the subject, how do you not substantiate that? And then again, no actual court case, no nothing that substantiates how he arrived at this conclusion. I mean, that's basic law. So, what was your question again? What would I? Can you say it?
No, it's okay, Adam. I know you got a lot going on in your mind right now. I'm just asking you, what resolution or action are you seeking regarding the complaint against Officer Mejia? You answered it for me. That's okay.
I would like him to be trained in how to do an investigation. That's one thing. It doesn't seem like he is. I don't necessarily know, like, what is applicable in the way of punishment, but he hasn't actually done his job as far as I see it. As far as my understanding of being a former police officer and investigator, he hasn't even remotely come close to that. So if you watch that video that I put on my website, you will see that this seems to be a systemic problem. That law enforcement doesn't have any clue that they have a duty to protect constitutional rights, even when they're violated by other officials. I mean, it seems to be a very systemic problem. And even if you come to them with a complaint like this, as you'll see in the video, you either get some piece of shit investigation like this, or you get, we're not doing any investigation whatsoever.
Understood.
And so there's a big question of who do the people go to when the government's actually literally violating their rights. And so now, as a result of Mejia not doing this investigation, now I have, I was forced into bankruptcy. Now my home's been sold in a foreclosure sale and I'm facing eviction. If he had intervened and stopped this, I don't think any of those things would be happening. So The other thing, I don't think that you can do this from your side of it, but I think, you know, Mejia should pay restitution. That's a separate thing that can be addressed in court, but if he wants to do that on his own, that is something that you know, is possibility. Okay. He has the duties to abide by under our Constitution, and if he's not going to do them, well, you know, again, I don't know what he knows or doesn't know, but this, from my standpoint, this report is a joke. He didn't do his job, and I think he's a good person. I think he means well. And as I said in the 240B, I think he got scared to stand on his own two feet. I really, really feel that that's what he did. He got scared, and he didn't have the support. He repeatedly told me that he did not have the support from the department, and I don't know why he never went to the district attorney's office or to the attorney general's office. I mean, maybe he did, but he doesn't put it in the report. Why not, if you don't understand something, get help?
I understand. I just brought up another question. Sorry to bombard you with all these questions, but I got another question. So I just want to make sure that I'm on the same timeline as you. So all of this happened when you entered this contract. When I say you, your partner, I'm not trying to sit here and interpret things, was in April of 2012. Am I tracking correctly?
Yes, that's when the project with the Humphreys began, yes.
And then this complaint investigation, I shouldn't say complaint, the investigation was brought to Officer Mejia in March of 2022. Does that sound correct?
Yes.
So 10 years later.
Well, no. Okay, because nothing happened in April of 2012. There was no crime that had been committed against me because there was no trial. The trial didn't happen until March 27th and 28th of 2017.
Okay, so we go from 2017 to 2022, so we're looking
We still go to hang on a minute. I need to share something else up with you. The appellate court judgment was not rendered until Court of Appeal opinion. That opinion was filed on, it looks like, October 1st, 2018.
Okay, all right.
Yes, and then this whole process, while this was going on, I was still uncovering the fraud. Even the judges don't seem to get what in the hell's going on. I seem to be the only person standing up and saying, wait a minute. Well, now there's starting to be some decisions coming out about what I'm saying. The other thing about that is that, I think, are you asking me that question from a statute of limitations perspective?
No. I'm trying to get my timeline here, and I didn't want to rustle through the paperwork while you were trying to talk. So I just wanted to make my time straight.
So. Okay. Yeah. The other issue was that, because I've never, on a statute of limitations issue, because I've never actually had a full, fair, and impartial trial, and I spent all this time trying to, have this reversed, there is, as I see it, there is no statute of limitations. The statute of limitations applies if you've had due process. There hasn't been any. And so what you'll see if you watch that video before I came to the CHP, or simultaneously while I went to the CHP, I was also going to other law enforcement agencies. I went to Costa Mesa, Irvine, Santa Ana, Orange County Sheriff's, the Attorney General, the Commission on Judicial Performance, although they're not law enforcement, but all these other agencies. And I mean, Mejia is the one that took a 2.5 year time to do the report, but again, I appreciate that. I appreciate that there was, you know, initially some intent to do something, but ultimately after 2.5 years, I got basically witness statements and an affirmation of what the judge did.
Okay. Understood. Okay. Hey, Adam, I have a few more questions for you, and I'm going to turn it over to my commander here. Is there any additional information? Actually, we've already answered that one. Sorry about that. Is there Has everything that you've shared with us, Adam, been truthful to the best of your knowledge today?
Absolutely.
Okay. At any time after this, after we hang up and we conclude our interview here, can I contact you in the future if I need to clarify any of your statements?
By all means, please either email me or just call and leave a message, and I'd be totally happy to help you however I can.
Understood, sir. That's all I have for you right now. We're going to just turn it over to my commander. He's got a few questions for you.
Okay.
Adam, Mike here.
Hi there.
So, flipping the switch to Lieutenant Monagudo.
Okay.
Let's do that. Okay.
All right.
That same question is Sergeant Newton asked you. What specific facts do you have to show Lieutenant Monagudo was dishonest with you during this process?
Okay, so I want to start with square one from him again. Is that I don't, in my 240 complaint, I state when I started emailing him and calling him about the problem with Mejia. And he never responded to any of that. I left a phone message for him, and I sent several emails to him.
Have
never
you sent
responded.
Emails forward?
I'm sorry?
Have you sent those emails to us, to Sergeant Newton?
I have not been asked to send them directly to him. I believe most of them are in the 240B complaint itself.
They are. Okay. Let me go to that real quickly, just to make sure I encapsulate those. I got one to Barnaccia, Mejia. Hope Maxson.
I didn't number the pages, I'm sorry, but there is one there. It says,
okay.
It's at the,
I see it here at the end, yes.
Okay.
December 6th, 2024.
And then you've got one December 30th, 2024.
Yes.
I made a statement that I called him. There was no answer. Yes.
Yes.
So, yeah, I was trying to avoid making a complaint and try to get Mejia to fix the substantive, meaning the meaningful problems with his report. And basically, for whatever reason, Mejia's immediate supervisor, I forget his name, and then Monteagudo, who I later learned was his supervisor, they didn't respond.
Okay.
I believe I also left a phone message for, let me see if I can find his name on here, Mejia's immediate sergeant, let's see, who was that? I want to say his name, it's like Nelson or Watson or something like that. I'm not recalling, but... Yeah, so that initial email that I sent to Mejia saying, hey, there's problems with your investigation report, that was also forwarded to his sergeant. And I left a message for the sergeant. No one called me back. So that's how I ended up. I wrote Maxson, and then she said, get a hold of Monteagudo, and that's how that happened. And then when nobody responded, I went to Sacramento.
Okay.
So nobody interviewed me at Sacramento. They basically just said, we're going to take down your name and state that you have a complaint, and we're going to give that to Santa Ana. So that's when I started calling Santa Ana saying, hey, who's doing the investigation? Who's going to interview me? And that's when Maxson said, I think we don't have anything to do with this. Contact Monteagudo. And so I never got interviewed. And then I got a letter in the mail from Monteagudo, and it stated, as is in the 240B report, you have the letter, right?
Yes, I'm looking at it.
Okay. So he states that he – wait. This letter is in response to the concerns you expressed by telephone to our department's internal affairs section on December 16, 2024. Although I did share some things with them, they told me that they were not doing an investigation and were not taking my statement. They said that the process is they take down your name and that you have an allegation of misconduct, and they forward that to the proper division where the complaint originated. So I don't know what concerns he's talking about. He said, you indicated Officer Mejia failed to properly investigate your allegation. That's one thing. Yeah, but there are many other allegations, as you saw, that we went over this report, including dishonesty, including, deprivation of violation of due process, failure to conduct a full, fair, impartial, independent investigation. I mean, yeah. So then he says, I would like to appraise you of our actions in this matter. Upon initial review of your allegation, it was determined a thorough investigation was conducted by Officer Mejia into your claim, and the investigation was reviewed by his direct supervisor and management for completeness or accuracy. Who reviewed it? And again, as you see in my 240B, how did they determine it was accurate and complete? I mean, everything that I just showed you shows that it's highly inaccurate and not complete at all. So then he says, he doesn't admit that he actually reviewed it, but he says, I believe your allegations are without merit. Based on what? And I have ordered the investigation closed with no further action. So my beef with him is nobody interviewed me to find out, as you guys are doing now, what the actual issues are. And so I find that his behavior is even more egregious or equal than Mejia. And so that's basically my allegation of misconduct with him. And I feel that because he's basically obstructing justice when I'm trying to have my complaint fairly investigated, and he closed when I'm coming forth with honesty and integrity to show that this has not been done right and that my rights are being violated and harm is being caused to me by power that's being imposed by the executive branch of California and the state of California, doing things without lawful authority. And then the officer doesn't do an investigation. I bring that to the department's attention and try to have it fixed without filing a complaint. The door gets shut on my face. Then I try to file a complaint, and then the investigation gets closed. That's bullshit. And so I think, that behavior just continues to obstruct justice, deprive me of the right to due process, and it's criminal, as far as I see it. Especially now when I'm faced with losing my home and, millions of dollars in work. And I mean, all of the untold emotional distress this has caused me and my family. I mean, this is disgusting. So that's my complaint with him.
Okay. Adam, I understand you're frustrated, and I appreciate you taking the time to go through and really dissect the investigation and highlight those things that you had issues with. The same as well. In their actions regarding Lieutenant Montegudo. That being said, a question I have to ask when we talk about dishonesty, and this goes both for Lieutenant Montegudo and Officer Mejia, dishonesty in the sense of it's clear that you don't agree with many portions of the investigation. Do you think that there is any deception, deceit in regards to the action thereof from Montegudo and Officer Mejia?
Absolutely. With Montegudo, I'll address that first.
Yes.
How could he say that he reviewed my allegations when he never got them? I mean, I don't know what he got, but the only one that he lists, according to what he says, is that Mejia didn't properly investigate. His statement appears to rely upon what he says is the concerns I expressed to our internal affairs section. Well, I called those guys and they said we sent them a letter saying that they need to do an investigation. So That's deceptive that he reviewed or somebody, he doesn't admit that he reviewed them, but he finds no merit in them when everything about what I'm sharing has incredible merit. This is the law. I mean, by the highest law, the highest court of our country. And so he's coming in and saying, oh, this is without merit and closing an investigation. That's deceptive. That's fraud. Because he's saying that he's using his official power to make a determination of fact and law and close down an investigation that's never actually been conducted and lying, saying that he actually investigated the claims when he didn't. That's incredibly dishonest and deceitful.
Okay.
As for Mejia, the big issue there is that he claims that he did an investigation. And again, if you look at this report, we have a bunch of witness statements. And most of them aren't even correct. And we have after 2.5 years, a couple paragraphs that don't even address the deprivations of constitutional rights. They don't really address the new law that has been made that I presented to him and all of the issues I raised while we were talking about this. And so how that can be, if you leave out pertinent facts to an investigation, how can that investigation be fair and impartial and truthful? It's kind of like this. In my video, I made an example of a police officer who gets a call to a robbery. And he shows up and there, in fact, is a robbery going on, but he turns his back and says, oh, I don't see a robbery going on. Nothing's going on here. And he drives away. That's kind of like what Mejia did. I gave him all of these court cases and all of these things that supported my allegations that crimes and or deprivation of rights and theft of my property has been done without lawful authority. And he never addresses it and yet says that he did an investigation and concluded that the allegations were unfounded. He doesn't even list what the allegations, well, he does list what the allegations were, but he doesn't address each of the allegations. Why were each of those things unfounded? That's important. I mean, we don't just take his word for it. We have no way to know until he comes clean and says, well, Mejia, did you find out if this was actually disgorgement? If it wasn't, what was it? Did you find out if it was a penalty? Well, if that's the case, Judge Chafee told you that it was punitive. Well, Adam gave you a case that says that the excessive fines clause applies to punishment, even if it's in a civil case. Did you determine if the excessive fines clause applied here? Did you determine if Judge Chafee did any of those protections that you stated on page 7, lines 1 through 3? It's all missing. So, and then when I brought some of these issues to his attention with integrity, he didn't respond. And so I, on those grounds, I feel that that's where his deceit is coming from. But as I shared earlier, there's that issue. And then, I mean, there's the other issue of the fact that I don't, for whatever reason, it doesn't feel to me like he felt like he had the confidence within himself to be able to step forward and stand in his power and tell the truth. And so, like I said, I think what happened is he just fell back on whatever the judges said. He didn't address the things that I brought to issue because that would have required him to make a determination of his own. And so he just fell back on what the judges did. And that's where it's not impartial. It's not independent. It's not full. And it's not fair. And all of those contribute to dishonesty.
And you feel sort of the allegations that you mentioned that aren't in the report that you claimed, that was done with intentionality on Officer Mejia's report? Is that your statement?
I'm sorry. Can you say, you said the allegations that aren't in the report. Which allegations are you referring to?
You listed during our discussion earlier many of the different issues that you had about information that wasn't in the report. The Liu case, Eisenberg case, and the Rector case that you brought forth to him, and none of that was in the report. Do you think that was done intentionally? Connecting this again to the dishonesty and deceit.
Okay. As I've shared, there's a fine line here. I need to go back and just give you a little bit of context. I spoke a little bit about it in my 240B. When I met Mejia for the first time at South Coast Plaza by my house in Costa Mesa, there was a light in his eyes that was not there in any other public official that I had ever spoken with, any other executive official. I don't know if it was because he was like a boot in investigations and just really eager to get to, you know, do a good job and do something or what, but he felt so sincere and honest and intent, it seemed, on getting to the bottom of things. And when we sat there for like an hour, hour and a half, whatever it was, and spoke about this, it was very clear to him that he saw the light of, it was very clear to me that he saw the light of what was going on here. That's my interpretation. And I really felt like he was going to, I mean, he showed up, he had the cases printed out, he created a binder. He told me he was talking to lawyers on his time off and other people to try to get a handle on this. And I don't know what happened behind the scenes that I wasn't a part of, but he, you know, usually an investigation, if there's a complaint about someone doing something wrong, you interview the person and then you go interview the bad guy. He didn't do that for like 2 years. He told me that, while he was investigating this, he got transferred to another part of the division. He was basically said, he didn't put in for that and didn't want it, but it was kind of like he was told, hey, you better do this. And so there was some frustration that was put there. And he also told me multiple times that it wasn't like he was getting support from the department with time to do this report. I don't know what was going on in his personal life. I don't know what was going on the job. But some transition happened, and I think that he was trying to avoid filing the report to try to stay in his integrity and not do harm to me by putting out something that didn't recognize my rights and that wasn't ultimately factual and based on law. But after like 2+ years and me starting to ask him what in the hell's going on, and then starting to write letters to his supervisors, I think the pressure got onto him. And whereas I said in the 240B, I feel like if he was truly standing in his integrity, he should have gone to someone and said, look, this is pretty complex. Some of these things I didn't receive training for in the academy. I'm not even sure if some of these things are, you know, required of my job or not. But there's clearly something going on here. I need help. I don't know if he ever did that. It doesn't say that he did in the report. It doesn't say that he went to an attorney general or the district attorney or even a criminal lawyer or even someone in the department, maybe like the Department of Legal Affairs, to get help. And so after saying all that, I feel like my interpretation, empathetically, intuitively, is that he ultimately felt like he was in a position where he had to do this, and the easiest way out, rather than coming forth and potentially getting something wrong, was to just follow what the judge said and ultimately not address anything that I said. I think he chose the path of least resistance, and was he intent in doing that? Yes. And at the same time, that was driven by fear. And so that's my take on it. Do I think that he ultimately was meaning to be vindictive, I don't feel he's that person. But his actions nonetheless caused harm and were a dereliction of his duty because he wasn't honest. I mean, if he knows what's going on, if he knows about the Liu case, the Eisenberg case, the M.W. Erector's case, he should be able to sit down and have a conversation with you about that after 2.5 years. So here's another interesting, I sent this to you this morning. After he interviewed Chafee, Chafee said this wasn't a penalty. So I said, Ernesto, the M.W. Erector's case, okay, that's not a holding of the court, but it's something the court calls dicta, where they make statements about things that aren't necessarily holdings of the court, but they're recognizing something about it. And I sent that to him, and it says, we've determined that, you know, or basically that the legislature's intent was to impose a stiff all or nothing penalty. So how is he like avoiding that entire issue unless he's doing it intentionally? Again, I think there are other underlying reasons why he's doing it, but he's making a conscious choice not to. He writes down what my allegations are, but he doesn't address any of them. Are you picking up like where I'm coming from?
No, thank you for clarifying. Yeah, and that not just here, but you know, for the remainder of the time that we spoke with you, in regards to the 240, and that was the intent of this interview, right? To really get a grasp on the words, you know, on the paper that you put on that 240B, to understand what your claims are and really hone in on the issues.
Perfect. Yeah, so it's not just essentially dishonesty. It's that he didn't abide his duties, that these were, and that violated my rights. And yes, there's that dishonesty part of it as well.
Okay, Adam, that being said, is there any further information that you want to bring forth during this call?
No, not right now.
Okay. Sorry, do you have anything further?
Hey, Adam, I'm probably going to be working on this weekend. Would it be inconvenient to you if I called you this weekend sometime? It would be during the day at a reasonable time. Would
absolutely
that be okay?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Call me anytime. I mean, I'm usually up after 7 a.m. and I go to bed. Well, I'm usually done for the day by 7 p.m. So
okay.
just you don't have to make any arrangements or send an email. Just call me. If I have the document or you don't understand something, I'm here. I want to be supportive and I'm happy to help.
I appreciate that, sir. And I thank you for your time. I know we've taken up over 2 hours of your time. I appreciate your patience with us.
No, and I very much appreciate both of your willingness to hear me out and not interrupt and to do a fair investigation and hear what's going on. On that note, I do want to just say that, you know, I don't know if this is going to happen, but my hope is that the department will ultimately do the right thing here and do an investigation and start stopping what's gone on here, including the evict me from my house being stolen from me. Again, I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but that's ultimately, I'm not asking for anything other than for the law to be followed in that regard. And so that's what I'd like to conclude with.
Thank you very much for your time today, Adam.
Thank you too. Have a nice evening.
All right.
You as well.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay.